We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good evening. Sun still shining on a Monday night. It's Mark Grody filling in for Joe O on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. The Chicago Cubs in the second series of the year will take on the Cincinnati Reds, a team which on paper looks a lot better now than it did last year when the Reds, and this is the way it's been for the Reds, and I don't think I'm phrasing it improperly, they weren't terrible last year at 75-87 and a fourth place finish, but it's been a while since the Reds have, like I said, looked legit on paper. And let's dig a little bit closer into those Cincinnati Reds and see what's real now as we welcome in Mark Sheldon of MLB.com. He covers the Cincinnati Reds for a living. You could find him on Twitter at M_Sheldon. Mark, good evening and welcome to The Score. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Good evening to you.
So,
can you hear me?
I hear you, man. Are the Cincinnati Reds as improved in your mind as everybody thinks they are?
I think so. Even before the shutdown of everything in March, they came into the year the most aggressive offseason team as far as procuring free agents and addressing deficiencies on their offense. They spent $166 million. They added Nick Castellanos. They added Mike Moustakas, Shoko Akiyama, Pedro Strop, and Wade Miley. And the offense was the real problem last year. They weren't scoring enough runs. They were 12th pretty much across the board in most of the big categories. And they believe those three bats they've added will help them. And they're also hoping, obviously, that some of the existing players either have better seasons or maintain what they were doing.
Yeah, and I really like the starting rotation for the Reds with Sonny Gray and, you know, Luis Castillo, I think, could be a Cy Young contender. Trevor Bauer, Wade Miley. And then it even puts, like, Anthony DeSclafani in the right place because you didn't want him necessarily up towards the front of that rotation. It finally puts him in a comfortable place. How legitimate do you think that starting five is?
Definitely. That's right there, 1-5, one of the deeper rotations in the league, especially in the National League. Gray's going to be the opening day starter, followed by Castillo, followed by Bauer, followed by Miley, followed by DeSclafani. And that's really the bread and butter. Last season, those guys did a really nice job, and unfortunately for them, they spent a lot of games being removed with very little run support and having to watch kind of games get away when they could have been won. And they led the league last year, I think, with 33 one-run losses. So the rotation did its job last year, and they're expected to do their job this year, and it should be the strength of the team. And if the offense can pick them up, this could be a very interesting team to watch, especially in a 60-game abbreviated schedule.
And then the bullpen, too, I think is, you mentioned they added the longtime and now former Chicago Cub and Pedro Strop, and Cubs fans know exactly what he can potentially deliver. The always interesting Michael Lorenzen, and then potentially still one of the best closers in baseball in Raisel Iglesias. How do you look at the bullpen for the Reds?
The bullpen has improved. I mean, really, Iglesias is a key, because last year he had a career high 34 saves, but he also set a franchise record among relievers with 12 losses. He just wasn't very good in situations that were, you know, non-save situations. They were trying to experiment with, you know, kind of what's in vogue now is using their closer, not necessarily for the ninth, but for the biggest high leverage situation. And Iglesias was terrible in April, and they kind of abandoned it. And he really did show, though, that he had a two-run difference in his ERA between save situations and non-save situations. So he has to thrive on those kind of big moments, and now he's got to do it with no crowd. And, you know, he kind of feeds off the ninth inning excitement. So it's going to be key for him, but the Lorenzen's going to have to be good again. Amir Garrett, Strope, Robert Stevenson. There's a few guys in the back of that bullpen that could be very impressive. They added a couple of non-roster guys in Tyler Thornburg and Nick Jones, former White Sox. And there's some good guys in that pen, so they can supplement. If the rotation can go far enough in this topsy-turvy season, the bullpen should be able to pick them up.
That's the voice of Mark Sheldon of MLB.com covering the Cincinnati Reds. I'm Mark Grody here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, until 10 o'clock tonight. All right, we know they're improved. I mean, it's obvious, but do you think the Reds have become the best team in the division? Do you think that they're the favorite?
I would stop short of the favorite. I still like the Cardinals. You can't really say that they're not the favorite right now, at least to me. I know they've had a couple of guys opt out, including today. But I still like the Cardinals. But the Reds, I think, are in at least position to get one of those wild card spots. I think they look very good for that. And they'll certainly be a factor in the division. I don't think they're going to be one of those teams that hits the skids early like they have in the last couple of years. I think it's going to be important for them to get to a nice start. They know the deal. There's no time for long losing streaks and extended slumps. They're going to be playing every game like their life depended on it. So it's going to be interesting to see, but I think they're definitely in the hunt.
What about Nick Castellanos? Because Cubs fans loved him. He was extremely productive in his short time with the Cubs. Everybody around here wanted them to sign him. Number one, were you surprised they invested in Castellanos? And what does he mean to for the Reds' sake, for the hopeful improvement of that offense?
I wasn't surprised, only because they had already, you know, dipped their toes into the deep end of the free agent pool with Moustakas and Akiyama. They said they had another move left and that they were looking to do something else. So it made sense when they got to the end of the month of January and they brought in Castellanos too. He's going to be their right fielder most likely. I'm sure he'll DH some as well. And he does bring legitimacy as far as he led the majors in doubles last year. He hit, I think, 16 homers for the Cubs in that last month and a half of the year, yeah. 2 months. And, He makes them credible. He's going to be in Great American Ballpark, which is an even easier place to hit than Wrigley. Certainly much easier than Comerica Park in Detroit. And it really does set up well for him. I don't think he's going to opt out after the first year like he has in his contract. I think now with the changing economics, he's going to be around for more than a year. So he has an opportunity to really establish himself and do well.
Yeah, and you pair that, as you mentioned, with Mike Moustakas and Eugenio Suarez, and that brings me to the old standby, Joey Votto, the former MVP. How's Votto doing? What's he got left in the tank? How's Votto?
Tell you what, in this summer camp, he's been an anomaly for himself in the sense that usually in normal spring trainings and regular seasons, he's a slow starter. He doesn't, you know, fare very well. And certainly the last couple of seasons, he had a slow start basically the whole season and he wasn't doing well, but he's been a tough out in these scrimmages. It's really hard to, of course, tell exactly without the other team being involved, but they're playing in these scrimmages and they're taking him seriously. And he's reached base a lot. He's drawing his walks, which he's done, but he's also gotten some hits. He hasn't hit one out yet, like some guys have. There's been a lot of home runs hit in the last couple of days, and he hasn't been one of them yet. But he's looked good, and he seems pretty primed to have a good year, a rebound year. He fully acknowledges that 2019 was probably the worst season of his entire career, and he's had only a couple of those, and it's you know, his power's down. He hit below 300 for the first time in a full season, and it wasn't just the Joey Votto season. Even his on-base percentage was down, and his strikeouts were way up. So I think there is something left. He's going to be 37 in a couple of months, but I think especially since he's not going to be the primary guy that he's been in the lineup with the supplemental help of course, Suarez, but now Moustakas and Castellanos, you know, he doesn't have to carry it. He can just be Joey Votto, and that's enough.
Yeah, I've always thought, and I don't know, maybe we started to see his game age last year, but I have always thought that his game would age well because, number one, he keeps himself in, like, tremendous shape. We know that about him. He puts so much care into his hitting almost obsessively, and he is a pure, like, even if the power goes down, he's a good hitter. So it's hard to know if last year was just an anomaly or if he is a guy that can play like into his early 40s. And I don't know, you'd know him better. Is he the type of guy who'd want to just keep playing and playing and playing, or will he know when to stop?
Well, in a way, contractually, he will have to play to his 40s. He signed till he's 42 or 41, but he, I think he would be willing to go into that era of, you know, the 40s if need be, as long as he's enjoying himself, as long as he's productive. One thing he may have a benefit of if the National League makes this DH business a full-time thing for the future, he could always move over to being a DH. He's still an okay first baseman. I don't think he's as good as he was when he won a Gold Glove a few years ago, but he's a capable first baseman, but they certainly have options with him if they have a DH too. And he's had two down years in a row. Certainly he's aware of that, and it's going to be important for him to come back and have a good year this year. In 2017, he was almost the MVP. He was a couple points shy of Giancarlo Stanton. So I still think it's in there. I still think he's going to have a Joey Votto-like year this year, as short as it is. And I just think there'll be – I don't think he's done yet. Let's just put it that way.
I love Eugenio Suarez. I think he's a guy that might end up in the MVP conversation this year. What's his contractual status with the Reds? How much longer is he under control? I don't even remember. Did he get an extension? I don't recall.
Yeah, he got a 7-year, $66 million extension in 18, I believe. Okay. And so he's got a ways to go. He's got 5 years left on that thing. So he's become a club leader. He's a really gregarious, fun guy. The social distancing is killing him because he's a hugger and he likes to have a good time and have fun. And he's, you know, it really showed on the field last year when he's hitting all those home runs and just he's just one of those good guys that you like having in your clubhouse if you're a team trying to win and take the next step. And he's definitely a leader. He's getting better as a third baseman, but he's got that power. Last year it was an explosive year for him, 49 home runs, and he just seems to be getting more and more into his power. And he had a shoulder surgery. He had an accident at home in January and fell in his pool in the shallow end and had to have his labrum repaired. But he's 100%. He wouldn't have been ready for the regular opening day, but he'll be ready now on July 24th. And he's looked very good in camp so far.
Wow. I did not remember that either. I feel like everything pre-COVID gets forgotten. So I'm glad that you reminded us of that. That would have really sucked if the Reds had to start the season without Suarez under those particular circumstances. So Suarez in place for a while. The Reds bring in Mike Moustakas as well. What's been the excitement level of Reds fans? I mean, I know from having been there when I did pre and post with the Cubs for 3 years that it's a terrific baseball town that sort of lost its way when they were bad. Do you think that they are excited about this team? Do they trust that the Reds can be good this year just based on the losing that they've had recently?
I would say A, they're excited, but B, they don't trust until they see. They want to verify this first, you know. There's been, Cincinnati, not just with the Reds, but it's been a heartbreaking stretch of sports in general between the Bengals being lousy, UC and Xavier. I've had some heartbreakers in the NCAA tournament. So there's a lot of negativity in the sports market here, and I think it's after 6 years of no playoffs, the Reds are just going to have to prove it on the field. There's not going to be enough capital for them just to say, hey, we're better, come watch us on television, or next year in the ballpark, but there is definitely excitement. I mean, there was a lot of buzz this year about the Reds, both locally and nationally, about all the moves they made. They really got aggressive. They really felt like last year was a turnaround as far as they were no longer a rebuilding team. They wanted to take the next step, and they did that when they addressed their pitching by adding Sonny Gray and a couple of other starters. And now this year they turned around and added on to the offense, and they believe they've put it all together.
Is David Bell a good manager?
I think so. I think he's fiery. It's really weird. And I don't know if you knew this from Chicago because he's more of a third base coach, but he's so mild-mannered away from the field and inside the office and clubhouse. And then he becomes a totally different person on the field. He led the league in ejections. I think him and Ron Gardenhire are tied with 8 each. Obviously, he had a epic one when the big brawl with Pittsburgh on July 31st or July 30th and came out of his office after already being ejected and had a fight. But, yeah, he's a good manager. I think the clubhouse really respects him. He was learning a lot on the job last year. It was his first time as a major league manager after doing some of it in the minors. He's still, I think – some pitchers want to trust him a little more. I think some of the starters were unhappy. He had some early hooks and relied on his bullpen and things like that. But I think overall he has a chance to be a very good manager. Yeah.
I remember that fiery story, and then the fiery Amir Garrett. He too. I mean, but is he usually like that? Is he usually on a 10, Amir, or was that just kind of a one-time thing?
For Amir Garrett or David?
Wasn't it Garrett who had the bullpen?
Garrett, he took on the whole team. Yeah, he took on the Pirates. Yeah. But honestly, that was one of those things that was boiling up for the whole. Both those teams absolutely hated each other last year. A lot of it had to do with them plunking Derek Dietrich, but also a lot of other players. And but the ejections had already started piling up in that game on July 30th, and so by the time Amir Garrett came in, he was hearing the chirping going on in the Pirates dugout. He basically was given the green light to go ahead and finish him, and he went after all of them. And it was kind of a wild night. And, I'll never forget it. Yasiel Puig wasn't even on the Reds anymore. He had just been traded and hadn't been told yet, and he was in the middle of that brawl. So that was some wild times for sure. But Amir Garrett is one of the nicer guys in the team. He's not a hothead. He's pretty competitive, but he's also one of the leaders in the clubhouse, and just him going after the Pirates was a very interesting night.
Do you remember, I don't know if you were covering the Reds then or not, but do you remember when Anthony Rizzo went after the entire Cincinnati Reds dugout at one point?
I do.
I think it was like,
he was unhappy with Chapman. I think Chapman plunked him, and he started making his way towards the Reds dugout, and it got a little testy. So yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, that was quite a moment. So maybe Amir Garrett and Anthony Rizzo could kick back sometime and talk about the times when they went after entire teams. Yes, they did. Well, Mark, I appreciate your time. I hope that is everybody okay in Cincinnati Reds land? I mean, have you guys had any COVID scares or anybody testing positive there in Cincinnati? How has the operation been for the Reds so far in this summer training camp or whatever we're calling it?
Well, knock on wood on their benefit, on their behalf. Yes, they've been pretty good so far. They had two tests positives before the intake, so those players are unidentified, but they're not here. But so far, they have not had anybody opt out, and they've had nobody, at least publicly, announce that they've had COVID. And there's nobody that's been missing for any extended period. So far, so good. In Cincinnati, things are kind of trending the wrong way in terms of overall COVID cases in the county and the city. So hopefully, they can stay safe and stay healthy. A few players are wearing masks when they're on the field. And like everyone else, I just fingers crossed that nobody gets it.
Well, Mark, I hope that you and everybody associated with Cincinnati Reds and everybody in Cincinnati manages to stay healthy. And thanks for your time, man.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
You got it. That is Mark Sheldon, MLB.com. Obviously covers the Cincinnati Reds. You can find him on Twitter at @M_Sheldon. Yeah, I was thinking about that Amir Garrett thing and him taking on the Pirates, and it always reminds me of Rizzo. This is early Rizzo. I think it was it? Yeah, because Aroldis Chapman was still on the Reds. It was like 2013 or 14 Rizzo, where he goes over to the Reds dugout and basically takes on the entire team because of some words he was having with Aroldis Chapman. And, you know, we all know that Rizzo is very tight with Joey Votto. So nobody took him up. I don't know that Rizzo would have necessarily won that fight against the entire Reds team. But that was a point, too, where everybody's like, he's the leader. Anthony Rizzo is our lead. Like, that was kind of bizarre, too, that we all of a sudden that day were like, we want him. He's our leader because he took on the entire Cincinnati Reds team. Like, Anthony Rizzo, the leader, has always been a little bit, just a little bit of an overrated concept. Not that he isn't, but everybody proclaimed him the leader. And anybody that has been on the inside of the Cubs, like I was for 3 years, and even before that, just covering the team, he's not like the voice of the locker room. He's extremely respected in that locker room and a guy that you have to go through for sure. But in terms of being, you know, a leader and a voice guy, that distinction probably goes more to somebody like Lester, even to Jason Hayward in terms of using their voice. Kyle Schwarber, even. I don't know. Like, it was just like everybody just put that on Rizzo and said that he's the leader. He's the leader. Like, one person said it, then everybody ran with it. I thought that was kind of comical. But anyway, that was good. Talk about the Cincinnati Reds and one of the Cubs' top competitors. I thought that Sheldon gave a pretty good answer about, are they the best team in the division? And I don't think you could say that yet until we actually see it in play. He said St. Louis, did not mention the Cubs. But I mean, they are, there's no doubt about it, man. I mean, you add Nick Castellanos and Mike Moustakas to a lineup that already has Joey Votto and Eugenio Suarez, Jesse Winker, and Nick Senzel, and Freddie Galvis. I mean, it's a pretty good offensive team that was not good offensively last year, but it seems like that was, you know, that's not been the Reds' problem in the last 10 years, hitting the ball. It's been throwing the ball, the pitchers. And when you have Luis Castillo, terrific. Sonny Gray, really good. Trevor Bauer, good. Wade Miley, good enough. And then, like I said, like, they've tried to pin Anthony DeSclafani up in the top of that rotation at times, or like just higher than he should have been. And now it puts him in a perfect place. They do have Pedro Strop this year. I don't know exactly where Strop is with his health and where he is and his effectiveness in his career, but you know that slider is going to get some guys out like it always does. I had forgotten that Raisel Iglesias had my God, what do you say, 12 losses for a closer? Jesus. So that has to be proven still. Until further notice, he might be one of those bullpen guys that is starting to go down just a little bit, but they're improved, no doubt about it. On paper, the Cincinnati Reds are a team which one must be reckoned with. Coming up at 9:20, we will talk about the Minnesota Twins as far as one of the White Sox top competitors this year, a team that they're probably my favorite for the American League Central. I think the Sox could probably give them a run for their money, but we'll talk about the Twins with Dan Hayes of The Athletic. That is, again, coming up at 9:20 tonight. Also on the show, a little bit, about an hour from now, we will do early odds. I don't do gambling, but we're going to keep the spirit of Joe Ostrowski's show alive. So a dude from the suburbs won over $1 million betting on golf through Bet Rivers Casino, which is in Illinois. So we are going to hear from him, how he won, what he is all about. And I heard from this guy a little bit earlier with Parkins and Spiegel. He's an interesting guy, man, who sounds like he's got some demons. He's not sure what path in life he's on because he gambles. Like, he sounds just a little bit troubled and a little bit angsty. So it made for a really good interview. So we'll bring that back to you in a little bit. If you want to get a hold of me on the text line, you can, at 312-644-6767. And from the 864, says both Central divisions are stacked this year and getting started for a couple teams or players. I don't know. I don't know if that made sense towards the end. But anyway, I don't know that they're completely stacked. I mean, they have the top teams are good, but there are definitely bad teams. Pirates don't appear to be that interested in winning ball games at this point in time, and I don't know that the Kansas City Royals are prepared to do a lot of winning. However, Jorge Soler is with his 49 home runs last year. So, yeah, I mean, you got to definitely keep every team in mind. But like I said, I still think it's going to be the top teams and the teams with the best 1, 2, 3 in their rotations that are going to still rise to the top. It's fun to think about the possibility of teams getting in there that you didn't think were supposed to because of the nature of the 60-game season. But I still believe it's not going to be a super surprising type of team. Here's a little bit of a surprise for you. Coming up next, Urlacher, the owner? Yes, sir. We'll explore that next. Mark Grody, in for Joe O, on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, Mark Grody with you on The Score. ESPN's Vaughn McClure, you know him from such places as the Chicago Tribune once upon a time ago. He used to cover the Chicago Bears, and he had a scoop today that Brian Urlacher, is one of a handful of prominent sports figures set to join a group headlined by Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez that is trying to purchase the New York Mets. Others in the group include Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce. Can you do that? Wizards star Bradley Beal and retired Browns offensive lineman old Joe Thomas. You know, now I'm thinking about this. Can an active... I guess so. It's not in the same sport. All right, never mind. So here's a quote from Urlacher, from Vaughn McClure. Being a former athlete and having a chance to be part of a group trying to purchase a professional team, it's pretty cool, Urlacher told ESPN. It's especially cool to be involved with Alex. Alex is the man, and presumably he is talking about A-Rod. And A-Rod has teamed up with his now fiance, yeah, Jennifer Lopez, who, check me out, huh? Fox Business estimates has a net worth of, that's Lopez, of between $225 million and $400 million. That sounds about right, actually, to go along with an annual salary of $40 million per year. So the couple, we'll call them a power couple, reportedly has put in $300 million of their own money to be part of the initial bid of $1.7 billion. Spotrac, by the way, estimates that Urlacher's career earnings as a Bear were a bit more than $80.1 million. So there you go. Urlacher, the owner. No, this is not. No, Urlacher, the owner, is not something I would not have predicted. But the New York Mets. Yeah, I guess this is something he wanted to get into. And he obviously digs A-Rod. So if he could put a few pennies in, it seems like Urlacher, it seems like he's doing retirement right. Like, he started to do some of the broadcasting stuff, and it didn't seem like it fit him personally. Like, it didn't seem like he particularly enjoyed it or really caught on anywhere. But now he's doing retirement the way I think I would do it, or I would think most of us would think somebody with a lot of money would do it, where you're just kind of picking your own projects and just doing what you... Hair restoration. I would like several billboards up along every highway, and I would like to collect the money for that particular endorsement. So, right, he can sit back and he can do that. He obviously can spend time with his family, enjoy being Brian Early. He seems like a really happy guy. Like, just from the interactions that I've had with him, whether it's at Soldier Field for Bears games, working the sidelines, or seeing him at some, like, at Bears Care and things like that. Like, he just seems like a made man, a really happy, relaxed, retired guy. So I'm happy for Brian Urlacher. And if this is where he wants to put his money, that's fine. And I actually think it's funny because I've become a little bit fascinated by the New York Mets in this offseason. Like, they may be a playoff team. And maybe I'm just getting hung up on the names because some of the names are older names on the Mets now. But check out the Mets this year. They have a pitching rotation of Jacob DeGrom, Marcus Stroman on the Mets. Oh, yeah. Rick Porcello is on the... Oh, yeah. Rick Porcello. That guy won a Cy Young. Won like 22 games a few years back. Steven Matz, still pretty good. Michael Wacha makes his way into the rotation as the fifth man. Once a very good pitcher with the St. Louis Cardinals. And yeah, it's possible that I'm just enamored by names in this case because these are Rick Porcello and Michael Wacha, and these guys are starting to get old, but I like that pitching rotation. I really do. And I like their bullpen with Yuris Familia and Dylan Betances. Hey, Betances. Seth Lugo and Robert Gesellman out of the pen. It's a good bullpen. And then it's a nice core of position players. You know, Pete Alonso and Jeff McNeil. Robinson Cano is on the Mets. Michael Conforto, if he ever becomes a polished product. Jonas Cespedes is still on the Mets. Brandon Nimmo, the outfielder, who had such a great start to his career. So you've got this, like, really nice, like, the perfect combo of younger and older players on that roster. So they're kind of my dark horse team this year in baseball. Just a little wink to the Mets. Like, keep an eye on those New York Mets. And it's possible that Urlacher has kind of seen the same thing that I have seen in that New York Mets organization. That's why he might want to put some of his millions in there. Let's go over the Cubs now. And there is one player on this Cubs roster who I think has... I will characterize it by saying that he has no F's left to give. And that's a good thing. I believe that for this player, it is going to manifest itself in a strong season this year and going forward in his career with the Cubs or not with the Cubs. That man to whom I am referring right now is one Kyle Schwarber. Think about the Schwarber career. Ready? Yeah, and I do this like two or three times a year when I get the chance to host. I usually do a Schwarber show. It's usually when he's really hot at the plate, and then we all just start thinking and dreaming about old Schwarber, and or I should say old school young Schwarber, like when he was drafted fourth overall in 2014. In 2015, he hits the crazy 16 homers in 69 games, hit a two-run homer in the wild card win against Pittsburgh like the best home run ever. He hits two more homers in the NLDS against the Cardinals, including the one he planted on the new scoreboard in right field at Wrigley. And he actually hit a homer against the Mets in the NLCS. Very easy to forget that since the Cubs' bats sucked against the Mets. But five homers in that postseason. 2016 Game 3, the collision with Dexter Fowler. Schwarber is broken. He tears everything. LCL, ACL, goodbye Schwarber. But he does miraculously return to the World Series. Gets seven hits. Reaches base 10 times in 20 plate appearances. It's comical what this guy did. I mean, he was doing superhero stuff in his career up until 2017 when they make Schwarby a leadoff hitter. He's awful as a leadoff hitter. And in late June, he is sent down to the minors. Womp wah. In 2018, he did the thing. Schwarber did the thing. He lost 30 pounds. It's the thing, right? You try to do something to make yourself feel better, to give a better appearance. It's the new me. Look at me. I'm still here. I lost weight. He did come in second at the Home Run Derby that year. If you'd like Schwarber accomplishments in a fairly nondescript season, 2018, I think, except for that Home Run Derby and the loss of weight. The look at me, I lost weight. I'm still here. I'm still Schwarber. And I don't know if that ever did him any good, but, you know, he did the thing. Last year, though, Kyle Schwarber, 38 homers, really strong second half. 70 games, 20 homers, 49 RBIs, 15 doubles to go with that. The guy has been through a lot, really, for a short career, having been around since 2014 and making the impact in 2015. He's been coached a lot. And to my original thesis on Schwarber, he has zero bleeps left to give. At least that's my... And here's why I say that. Let me take you back to January of this year. At the Cubs convention, yes, there was a Cubs convention this year, 2020, heading in when everything was okay, and this is January, and there's no such thing as COVID, and he was on the score with Julian Maggi and asked about launch angle. Check this out from Schwarber.
I think it's a load of BS, in my opinion. Sorry, I know. I think that stuff's BS. I mean, this literally they're trying to make hitting harder. Yeah. I feel like, and trying to the preset things that launch angle happens every time you hit a ball, no matter what. If I hit the ball, like, and I swing straight down, that's a negative whatever launch angle. And if I swing straight up, it's 90. But think about it. If I'm going to go flat as could be, I go hit the ball super flat, there's going to be a launch angle no matter what. So why would I want to lessen my chance? Because think about it. If you're swinging up to a ball, you have to be perfect with that ball to hit it. Besides, if I'm going to be flat, I'm going to come through the zone. Now I got from there to hit. I got through there. I got through there all the way out. So you just want to be more flat in the zone. I think that stuff's all BS. Just go out there, work on a flat swing, and focus on really hitting the ball with the barrel, because good things are going to happen.
Exit velocity, just hit it really hard.
Yeah, just hit it really hard. Yeah, exactly.
So, see what I mean? Schwarber is kind of done. And I can imagine if Anthony Iapoche is like, okay. Look,
Schwarber's I get a real old man yelling at cloud vibe from that whole clip.
Right, and he's 27 years old. It's funny you mentioned that, Adam, because we talk about, you know, we make fun of Grauber a lot for his disdain for cybermetrics, or whatever he calls it, and the newfangled numbers and things like that. To be honest with you, most ball players there's more players like Schwarber than there are players like say Joey Votto, or guys that are into the metrics and the numbers and they really want to know most guys, you want to know what, like, people get made fun of when they talk about RBIs or bad. You know who likes RBIs? Anthony Rizzo. You know who likes batting average? Chris Bryant. So these young guys from the youngest possible 20s generation, 20-year-olds, that is, they think more like 80-year-olds than they do than you would think would be like what a 20-year-old is. And I know that people love to talk about these things, and it is interesting, and there is something to be gained from these numbers. But believe me, from having been around a lot of baseball players and very close to them, knowing what they talk about, they are into the old school statistics more than you know. And I think that Schwarber gave a great example of it. And like, this doesn't mean he's not going to listen and that he doesn't pay attention to Iapochi, or that he hasn't paid attention, or that he just sort of waves off his, you know, John Mailey or Chili Davis or whomever it was. But Schwarber figured it out last year, and something tells me he figured it out by just going back to being Schwarber, who is just a straight-up thumper. I could also tell you that Schwarber is supremely confident, like a lot of those Cubs players. All of those guys, like the core Cubs, are somewhere between confident and cocky. I'm always looking for the word. There's a word in there somewhere between confident and cocky. They're not quite overly confident. They're not quite cocky, but there's something. And maybe cocky a little bit, but that's all right. And I'm talking about Baez and Bryant and Rizzo and Contreras. They're all under that same mentality. So my point is, on Schwarber, he's mentally strong. Trust me on that. So I think you're going to see him doing things more his own way going forward. Not going to reject input. He's not like that. He's not like rejecting coaching. I just think he's heard too much. And sometimes that information and all the modern tools that exist there, it very simply, it ain't for everybody. And I don't know that it's all for Schwarber. And look, I am not trying to say that Schwarber is going to dominate and be an MVP candidate like we all thought, but I think he's going to be free. He's going to feel free. He's going to be loose and do things more his way. Last thing I want to play from Schwarber is about what I think we've all thought of Schwarber in terms of his eventual MLB existence, and that is Schwarber the DH. Here's what Schwarber thinks about being the DH this year.
Luckily, in my DH stints, I've had pretty good stints there. So, I kind of have an idea and formula of what I want to do just in terms of myself. And, I'm more than open to talk to anyone who else is going to be in that spot and pass along, things that I do. I think the key is, you think of a DH and you think about them taking their bat. And, then the next thing, they're going back down into the cage and they're swinging. I think that's not the case. I think the biggest thing for a DH is to be able to stay locked into the game as much as possible. Know what's going on, see what's going on. Keep your mind into it, because, if I take a bat off of watching Anthony Rizzo, Jason Hayward, similar lefties, I might miss something that pitcher might try to do to me. So that's kind of the biggest thing here, is being able to lock into the game, get your swings in when you need to get them, stay loose, get on the bike before you're at bat. But I think that's the biggest thing, is to stay locked into the game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So I like the attitude. No, there's very few players who like want to be DH. But look, Schwarber is perfectly fit for it. We'll talk more about that when we return. Coming up at 8:20, we'll do early odds, and then at 9:20, for the sake of the White Sox and White Sox fans, we'll get into one of your top competitors, the Minnesota Twins. We'll do that with Dan Hayes of The Athletic coming up at 9:20 tonight. Mark Rohde in for Joe O on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You still don't need cybermetrics to figure that out.
Mark Rohde in for Joe Ostrowski, and that was my guy, Les Grobstein. And incidentally, I will be featured on Score Overnight tonight. I will be on with the Grobber at midnight. He has asked me to be on his show, and I have said, hell yeah, anything for the Grobber. I've already had a day, man. This day, like, I recorded, I did my own podcast today. Let me put a list together. We did Martin Scorsese films today. If you want to check, it's actually, that is not up yet. It'll be up tomorrow. But if you want to check out my podcast, let me put a list together, all sorts of really awesome topics, movies, Saturday Night Live, late night talk show host, all sorts of fun, entertaining stuff. Not necessarily sports, but stuff that I think sports fans would probably like. So let me put a list together. But, oh my God, I was on today. I was also the guest on a podcast. Told you, I've had a day already. I was a guest on the Les Grobstein, David Schuster podcast today. So I would imagine it's up and running right now. I think it's a product of Bears Barroom, my guys over there, Aldo and Company. So if you want to check that, always a pleasure, man. Two of my favorite people, Les Grobstein and David Schuster.
You have no idea how jealous I am of that. Like, I think I would pay money to go on that podcast.
It was an overwhelming moment for me. I felt like after I did the segment, I felt like we were just getting cooking, and then it was time to go. And I took Robert, said, "Hey, can you come on my show tonight? I need you to come on at midnight, and we'll talk." So, as you know, Adam, and those of you who know me and know Grobber, you know that that could get interesting at midnight because, well, anything goes when it comes to Grobber and I. We like to think, Grobber and I, that we started Transition at the Score, which we absolutely did not. But sometimes we like to throw that out there as absolute fact.
Well, can anyone prove that you didn't start Transition?
I mean, probably. They can probably go back. I mean, you know, Score started in what, 92? There is cassette tape evidence somewhere, but maybe we could damage that. Actually, I think, doesn't Grobber have all the cassette tapes of everything ever?
He might. I mean, if he doesn't, I know Tanny keeps a lot of that stuff archived. He might not have stuff from the 90s, but from as long as he's been here, I'm sure he's got some stuff.
Well, then, you know what, dude? We're just going to roll with it then. We're going to roll with it that Grobber and I, yes, we did it. We started Transition when I used to do the morning updates on what was then the Mully and Hanley show. I would come in at 4 to get prepared and get ready, and then around 4:30, Grobber would have me on. And it really worked well for both of us because Grobber needed content because that's a hell of a hard shift to have to do, 12 to 5, where you're basically talking to yourself for 5 hours. So he would see me and salivate because it was another voice that was willing to come on the air with him for as long as he wanted. And I genuinely enjoyed doing it, in part because I like Grobber, but number two, it warmed me up, man. I got to practice using my words that early in the morning because it can be tough. Like, imagine getting up at 3 in the morning and then having to use words. Those are the rigors we go through in this broadcasting industry. So it worked for both Grobber and I. So you can check out the Grobs podcast if you want to be entertained by all three of us knuckleheads. And then I'll be on with Grobber tonight on the Score. In the meantime, I'm in for Joe Ostrowski tonight until 10. I'll be in for Joe all week, actually, or at least for the next 3 days. Then I'm in for Lawrence for a couple of days. And from the 847, a great word here, because I was trying to figure out that word between confident and cocky, like in describing the demeanor of a lot of the Cubs players, because I don't know if confident fits them. I don't know that cocky is correct because of that's kind of a negative connotation. From the 847, they say, sorry, I was reading another text. Bravado. Bravado. That's a pretty good word. That's a pretty good word. From the 864, reminiscent of C-ball, crush ball. Yeah, that is in reference to Kyle Schwarber. You typically don't want to like use that as a directive for a player because it's very simple and that eventually will go wrong. But it almost is befitting with Schwarber, right? Like, Schwarber, get up to the plate, C-ball, crush ball. And that's what he does best. And, you know, I think that it's possible Schwarber, I don't know if he's ever going to be in an MVP conversation like we once thought, but 38 to 43 or 44 home runs in a typical year is probably not completely out of the question. So I'm glad that we did that, talking about Schwarber. We're going to talk more Cubs in the 8 o'clock hour. Plus, at 8:20, we'll do early odds with a big winner, a guy who in Illinois at Bet Rivers won himself over $1 million very recently betting on golf. We will hear his story. We will hear from him. And then we'll talk about the Minnesota Twins and the White Sox competition at 9:20 with Dan Hayes of The Athletic. I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.